Hey, now for another subject. You got the New Zealand Prime Minister coming to California for a rocket going to the moon?
New Zealand Prime Minister is going to go visit. They're going to watch the rocket launch from Vandenberg in California. Is that what they're going to do?
That's correct. And I'm looking at a picture of this rocket. And this rocket has to go to the Kennedy Space Station, which is 900 miles away from where it's built. How are they going to get it there?
Oh, I know what you're looking at. That big one. Tank, you see, with the four, and it's got four engines sticking out of it. Is that the one you're looking at, Charlie?
That is correct. That is, I'm looking at the picture, and I'm saying to myself, how are they going to ship this 900 miles?
Yeah, actually, they've done it before. Remember, two Decembers ago now, they launched the first mission to the moon and back was called, you know, Artemis 1, and it was an unmanned mission, you know, but it was a spacecraft that could have held four people on board, you know, but it was the first flight, so they didn't put astronauts on board, and went all the way around the moon, and eventually came back and splashed down in the Pacific Ocean. Well, that was launched on the same rocket, the SLS, the Space Launch System. From Launch Complex 39B in Florida, and the first stage is 212 feet long. That's the first stage. Eventually, there's another stage that goes on top of that. But that, yeah, they have to get it from New Orleans. To Florida. So what they do is you probably see the picture of them pulling it out of the building, towing it out, and eventually that gets towed over near the water, and it gets put onto a special barge. They have a name for the barge. It's called the Pegasus barge, and it's the same barge they used to use for the space shuttle. You know, the big tanks used to come out of this same facility in New Orleans when they launched the space shuttle, and you know they launched 135 space shuttles, so they're familiar with how to do this. The only difference is the external tank on the shuttle, you know, was a little shorter than this thing. This one, like you said, you know, that you're looking at is even longer, and what they have to do is, you know, extend the barge. They, you know, rebuilt the barge, and the barge is covered. You know, it's one big giant, steel cover covering it. It's like a big Quonset hut. And they're able to fit this whole thing inside that barge. And then they close it up, and off it goes. And they don't tell anybody, you know, when it's leaving or when it's going to dock in Florida. But it floats out into the Gulf, you know, from New Orleans, and heads around to the ocean, well, the ocean side, and eventually docks in the port of Canaveral, and eventually they unload it there, and they bring it over to the vehicle assembly building, and once it's there, they'll pull it in and pull it up vertically, where it will eventually, now you got to remember, what you're looking at, it has the four engines, the four RS-25 engines attached, and those engines, will be on the bottom end, they'll pull this whole section straight up, and eventually they'll put the second stage on top of it. And then on the port side and the starboard side, they'll eventually attach these massive, solid booster rockets. Remember, the shuttle used to have these solid booster rockets as well. It's the same diameter, a little over 12 feet on the boosters for the diameter. And they were four sections, it was four sections put together, like, you know, four beer cans on top of one another. And this one has the same idea. It's a solid booster rocket that'll be attached. But instead of four sections, it's got five sections. So it's bigger overall. So that's where it's going to wind up. And then somewhere in the future, when they're ready, they'll actually take the spacecraft itself, the Orion spacecraft, with the service module. Service module is built in Europe. European Space Agency has a contract with us to do that. That supplies oxygen, fuel, water, and stuff like that for the spacecraft itself. And then you'll have a complete rocket. And there's some fairings that go around it that separate after launch. And that rocket is not, you know, won't be going off anytime soon. Once that launch that launch date is scheduled right now for next September, not this September, next September, and now I'll have a crew of four astronauts, which they've already picked: Grover, Christina Cook, Hansen from Canada, you know, and a fourth person. So you know, we'll see. Right now they're working on trying to correct the problem with the heat shield. When the first one came back, it was a test, like I said, went around the moon, came back, landed in the ocean. They noticed that the heat shield had a lot more abrasion and problems than they had expected, so they're working to correct that. I guess, now that they're moving this thing, they must know that they're going to be able to do that in time, otherwise they wouldn't be shipping it over. So every time one of these SLS rockets will go up, and it'll be like roughly every year, they plan on launching another one of these things. Naturally, anything on here is not recoverable. It's not going to be reused, except for the Orion spacecraft was designed to be reused, but that will not be reused, according to what I've read. But at one time, that was going to be reusable. So it's interesting. We'll turn it back. I'm not sure about the New Zealand flight. I don't know if we're conflating the two stories. That sounds like a SpaceX flight that might be going off, or another company, from California. Not sure about that story. Anyway, back to you, Sean.
Yeah, those barges, the barge that this is going to travel on, I would love to see the size of this thing. I really would, because this is a couple hundred feet high when it's laying down, and it's the length of it is just overwhelming me.
Yeah, well, when it floats away, it'll be laying down horizontally, not vertically. And if you put in the computer Pegasus barge for SLS or Space Launch System, you should get a whole bunch of pictures. You know, you click on video, or you know, you'll get movie pictures of what this thing looks like, or just images. Of course, that's not like, you know, looking at it in person. It must really be impressive. Yeah, if you look at the picture, I think you will. there's a couple of people walking around. It gives you an idea of the relationship between the size of the people and the size of this this first stage rocket with the four engines.
And what are those four engines running on?
Yeah, they're the same engines that they use for the space shuttle. They're called RS-25 engines. Space shuttle had three. This thing has four. And then space shuttle had two massive solid booster rockets that they used to help lift it off the ground. This one also has two. Like I said before, these are a lot longer. But the engines themselves are liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen. The thrust is, on each engine the thrust is going to be 550,000 pounds of thrust as well. So you're going to wind up collectively just with liquid engines of liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen, over 2 million pounds of thrust. And then the solid booster, they really put out a lot of power. Those things put out each one 3.5 million on each side. When that thing takes off the launch pad at Launch Complex 39B in Florida, it'll be around a little over 8 million pounds of thrust. That's a lot of thrust. They know it's going to work because they've already done it. That's the same rocket that they put the spacecraft around the moon. Back to you, Charlie. WS2N.
This is not full of fuel, is it? It's just empty.
Yeah, that's correct. But once it's vertical, and then they fuel it. And it's going to have a little over 1 million pounds of combination of liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen. So they'll fill it up, and off it goes. They had a lot of problems with the first one because hydrogen leaks very easy. It's a very thin molecule, and a number of times they had to delay the launch. They eventually brought it back to the vehicle assembly building, redid this, redid that, and then finally got off the ground. But it's plenty of power with the liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen, and the smoke that you see coming off of that is really water vapor. So that's the exhaust. Now, the solid booster part, that's different. Those things are solid fuel, aluminum, like an aluminum oxide type of fuel. That's what they have in those things. That's like a Roman candle, Once you light them, you can't shut them off. The four liquid hydrogen oxygen engines, you could throttle them, up, down. So once those solid boosters separate at the 2 minutes of flight, then you're on just the core, just the thing that you're seeing with those four engines, and that will take you another 6 minutes to orbit, and then that whole thing separates. And then the stage above that ignites, And then that's the one that's got the crew on board. Back to you, John.
Hey, that sums that up. How's the International Space Station doing today?
And by the way, you were right, like 900 miles from Louisiana all the way to Florida, where they got to launch that thing. And the ISS, they still have 9 people on board. You know, a couple of Russians. Actually, they take turns who the commander is right now. The Russian is the commander. And then eventually the Americans become the commander. And sometimes they have, like one time they had a guy from Canada, he was the commander. But yeah, right now 9 people on board. You know, 7 is the main number that they keep on the ISS. And then the extra 2 are still Sonny Williams and Butch Wilmore. And they're the ones that went Starliner. And they're still there. They think maybe the end of this month or the beginning of next month they'll bring them back on Starliner. By that time they should be ready and get all the data that they're looking for. They might remember that. That's the spacecraft that had all the thrust problems. And, they're working on it, you know, making sure that it will be safe for them to return. So they're all doing good. They have exercise equipment on board. They have a treadmill. They constantly have to use that. So they're always exercising. They are not going to do any more EVAs from the American side. The Russians can. They have different spaces. But on the American side, they're still waiting to try to figure out why they had this water leak a few weeks ago when the girl, Tracy Dyson, she was going to do an EVA with the other fella. And for some reason, they opened the door to the outside hatch to float out. And before they could do that, they disconnect from the space station. They have external hoses hooked up to the suit. And one of the hoses all of a sudden, not in the space suit, but, exterior, started shooting water all over the place, instantly turned to ice, you're in a vacuum now. Before they leave, they create a vacuum inside the quest lab. That's where they get dressed and get ready to disembark into space. So now they have to try to figure that out. They're working on that problem. And there's a couple of EVAs that are planned that are now delayed until they fix the situation up. These spaces were designed in the 70s, late 70s. They've been used, they've been improved over the years, but they've been used constantly, this design, since that time. All the space shuttle flights that you saw, had these spaces. And, they need to straighten that mess out. Might remember Collins Radio. That company is actually still around. They had a contract recently with NASA to build new spaces. And I guess it became overwhelming or something. They told NASA, that's it, we're not going to do it. So they dropped their contract. That only leaves one company, Axiom. Axiom is doing the spacesuits for NASA now. But they're not ready. They need to work through the problem. They have pretty much a date certain, or a year certain anyway, where they're going to deorbit the International Space Station. Plan is to attach a rocket to the Harmony module, in front of the space station. Turn the space station completely around 180 degrees, and then fly a rocket to slow it down to deorbit the whole thing. And they're thinking 2031 for that to occur. They gave the contract to SpaceX. SpaceX is going to build a modified Falcon 9 rocket. Falcon 9 normally has, they call them Draco engines. There's Draco thrusters, they have dozens of them on each spacecraft, but then there's four main Draco engines, which could be used, you know, let's say for an emergency. Let's say there's a possible explosion on the pad. They can get away from that explosion by lighting off these Draco engines, and that would push them away, and they'd go about a mile away from the launch complex, you know, with a parachute and everything, and they'd be saved. They plan on taking about 40 of these things and putting them in the back of a Falcon 9 rocket. So, you know, you can envision this thing going up unmanned. They have no problem with autonomy. They do that all the time with their cargo versions. And, you know, they go up, dock by themselves, deorbit by themselves. So they'll do the same thing with this. This thing will go up with around 40 of these high-powered thrusters, and over time they'll float the whole space station down, which weighs around a million pounds now. And then eventually, as it gets slower and slower, it'll pick up atmospheric drag and then burn up over the South Pacific Ocean. But when they, you know, they have it takes a long time to figure out when and where they're going to dock this. The rocket that's going to deorbit it will have to be launched about a year and a half before it actually docks with the space station, which is kind of weird. I haven't figured out why they're going to do that, but, you know, as this rocket is floating up there, you know, you'll still have a crew on board. So, and then eventually they'll dock with the space station. Again, you'll still have a crew. But at some point, that crew will have to disembark and that spacecraft can get away from the International Space Station. And then they'll direct the 40 Draco engines to ignite and start slowing the space station down. And with that kind of action, eventually they can time it just right where it burns up over the South Pacific Ocean. Doesn't wind up coming down over a city, because there are some parts that are going to survive all the way down to the water, and they don't want that over a populated area. Now, they have another problem, which, you know, I've been reading about it, and they haven't addressed this yet. They plan on attaching a space a new space station is going to be attached to the front end of the Harmony module, where this would be SpaceX, you know, deorbit vehicle will be attached. So before they could do that, they're going to have three new modules that are supposed to be sent up, maybe even four. Axiom, the same company that's building the EVA suits, the spacesuits, that same company will be attaching these four modules to the front of the space station. And it'll stay like that for a couple of years. They'll eventually send crews up from that company, and they'll be able to spend time in their own little space station, still attached to the International Space Station. So at some point, let's say 2030, a year before they actually deorbit the thing, they're going to have to separate these three modules in one piece. It's going to have its own solar panels and everything. And it's going to, it'll disconnect from the space station, float away, and become its own space station. It's going to have, you know, a capability, you know, it's got thrusters on it and all of that. Then crews will be able to continue to go up to the Axiom space station. That's actually a plan. It's actually hardware being built, I think, in Italy. This company's building the first and second modules that will be attached to the space station for the new space station. So, you know, they're going to have to time this where that thing separates from the space station, and then this new SpaceX deorbit vehicle will be attached to that same port. They'll have to rotate the whole space station. space station 180 degrees, fire the rocket, slow itself down. And well, actually, no, they don't. Correction, they don't have to turn it around because they're already going forward. Correction, they can just attach it to the front end and then ignite it. They won't have to turn the space station. What am I saying? Anyway, we'll turn it back to you, Charlie. Any other comments? This is WS2N for the SpaceNet report.
Now, the American astronauts, they've been up a long time now. Do they need refueling or, resupply?
Yeah, constantly. You know, they're constantly bringing up food and clothes and stuff, you know, on a regular basis. SpaceX has a cargo vehicle. They dock with the space station with thousands of pounds of stuff every now and then. They launch the Cygnus spacecraft again with cargo many times. I think it's over 20 times now. They dock with the space station. You have the Russians with their Progress vehicle. Looks like the same vehicle. They have a crew that comes up in, like their Soyuz rocket. The Progress is looks the same, except it doesn't have people. Docks with the space station. Has fuel, for the space station. Has clothes, food. Up every time they do this. And then there's a new one that's scheduled to eventually launch. Supposed to launch by the end of this year, but I don't know. I haven't seen anything recently on it. Maybe the beginning of next year. I'd like to see it go up this year, but I don't know. Maybe it is a delay. And that's called the Dream Chaser. Dream Chaser is going to be launched on a Vulcan rocket with the two B-4 engines I talked about earlier from Blue Origin, and that will put the Dream Chaser in orbit. That's going to carry a lot of material, food and clothes, experiments, and that will dock with the space station. And that will be the first one, Dream Chaser. That's reusable. That will eventually separate from the space station and fly back. It has wings and everything, so the Dream Chaser will be able to land on a runway. So that will be another cargo vehicle that goes to the space station in the future. So, now you say, well, where are all these cargo vehicles going to go? What are they going to do in the future? Well, like I said, the one space station, the Axiom one that's going to separate from the International Space Station, they'll be able to visit that, bring crews up to it, or maybe cargo, or you could have other space stations. There's something called the Orbital Reef that's being built by Blue Origin. That's going to be a very large space station if that's ever put up there. There's something called a Star Lab. Not Skylab, but Star Lab. That's a couple of companies are involved with that. There's a company called Voyager that's handling it. And they're involved with Grumman and another big company, Airbus. Is it Airbus? Airbus. Airbus is the one that built the airplanes, right? They're involved with that space station as well. So there'll be other space stations to visit, and that will be, the future of, let's say, Starliner or Dream Chaser, especially Dream Chaser. They plan on, instead of making that a cargo vehicle, it will be both a cargo vehicle and a crew vehicle. So there's a lot of, big plans and money invested. Some of these things come about, and some of them don't. Back to you, Charlie.
Okay. Now, tomorrow at 11 o'clock, they're supposed to be streaming NASA to Florida, Tampa, Florida. But tomorrow, they're supposed to be having some sort of, like, you can see what's going on at on the spaceship.
Conference, then, you know, different news agencies or sometimes different organizations have scheduled times. They call them events, you know, with a couple of the crew on board the space station. It sounds like it's probably one of those. They had one not too long ago, and that was with the two people that went up on Starliner. And the news keeps writing it up that they're stranded there. They're not stranded there. They're just waiting for tests to be done and then eventually leave. But they have a news conference. Sounds like that. You know, sometimes they have conferences with different schools and all. You know, with video conferences. And then, of course, there's other times that, you know, ARIES, amateur radio on the International Space Station is involved, and they have amateur radio contacts with usually just one member of a crew. So I'm not sure which one they're doing that, you know, tomorrow. There's always something going on up there. Back to you, John.
Now, they have a briefing on the 26th. How can I tap into that?
The 26th, it's coming up. What I do is, well, sometimes you think it's going to be, you know, a regular news conference where you're going to see the crew and hear the crew. You know, that you could always go to NASA.gov, and there's something called NASA TV. You click on that, and that usually comes up. But some of these news conferences, there's just audio. You know, there's a bunch of news stations. You know, ABC and CBS and CNN, and, you know, they get on and ask questions. You know, sometimes it's a website like spacenews.com. They'll ask questions, and whatever it might be about, usually it's one particular topic. And they'll have, you know, three or four experts, people that are involved with whatever topic we're talking about, answering questions. And to get that, you go to NASA.gov at the proper time and date, and usually you'll see something that it'll say, you know, teleconference. That means, you know, no video, but you'll be able to hear what they're saying, the questions and answers. Back to you, John.
Now, it says it's streaming on NASA, NASA TV.
Yeah, that's what I bring up all the time. I have that as a favorite. There's regular NASA.gov and then NASA TV. If you bring up NASA TV, that'll work. And then what I do is, you know, since I go to NASA.gov all the time, there's always a choice for NASA TV from that website usually. You know, that's what I do. But yeah, I have both. I can just click on NASA TV. And for some reason, they always start about 3 or 4 minutes late. I don't know why. They'll say, you know, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and, you know, sometimes you got to wait till like 5 after or so, you know. But, you know, I don't know. I'm not sure what the problem is with that. But, you know, I guess it's coordination. But does it say what it's about in what you're reading? You know, usually it has a topic, you know. Back to you.
It doesn't say It just says NASA SpaceX Crew 9 Overview Briefing, streaming on NASA TV and NASA TV Media Channel.
Okay. SpaceX. It just says SpaceX, and that's it. It doesn't have anything about it. Nothing else you can click on that tells you what it might be about.
No, it doesn't say what it's about.
Okay, that's all. All right. Yeah, sometimes they'll say it has to do with the repair of the spacesuits, an update on that, or an update on the possible leak that they have, or the leak that they do have on the Russian side, or something. Okay, I'll look for it anyway. That's on the 26th. And sometimes, by the way, they cancel these things. I put them on my calendar, and 3 weeks goes by, and I look, okay, let me bring it up, and I find out it was canceled. So you got to watch for that, too. Okay, I just want to talk about the, on the moon, they've found caves. They always knew that there's probably caves on the moon. And, these are large caves, hundreds of feet, wide, and maybe, 50 feet deep. And they think there might be hundreds of these things on the moon, but they've actually confirmed one now. A research group in Italy actually confirmed it. So, which would be good. You could actually, land rockets in that area where these caves are, and actually set up facilities inside. You'd be protected from radiation or micrometeorites. It'd be like living in a enclosed little town. And they've known that they must have these things on the moon. They suspect different locations. And the reason they exist is because at one time when the moon was young, it had volcanic activity. So they had lava flowing, large amounts of lava flowing, and then it would push through the surface, and then when the lava dissipated, it would leave these, these long caves, and then, nothing gets disturbed on the moon for billions of years, and, they know that they have these facilities they could actually use as little bases for future locations on the moon instead of, worrying about maybe digging a hole and getting into it underground to protect yourself away from the from radiation. You'd be able to utilize one of these caves. So I thought that was pretty good. It's actually been confirmed. The location is not far. It's about, I think they said about 80 or 100 miles away from Tranquility Base. Tranquility Base is Tranquility, where the Apollo 11 had landed, so not too far from there. Once they have a pinpoint landing down to perfection, they'll be able to do that land and eventually set up little bases in these lava tubes. I thought that was pretty cool. I mean, they've talked about this for, I've read about it for years, decades even, but now they've actually confirmed that one exists. Any comments?
Paul, these caves look like they're handmade. Nice, soft, smooth, and well carved out.
Yeah, Yeah, not carved out, but, you know, I mean, carved out by natural forces. You know, you have, lava flowing, you know. And then, that actually creates this cave, and then the lava goes away, you know, and leaves behind these caves that look like they, you know, somebody probably, you know, went in there with a hammer and chisel and, you know, made a gigantic cave, you know, to perfection, you know, a nice, smooth cave, you know, when lava pushes through, that's probably what, you know, what it's like. Like one big snake being pushed through the lunar, I don't know if you want to call it soil, but maybe I would call it mantle, you know. So, there you go. Anyway, I've pretty much run out of topics, Charlie, so I'll entertain any more comments or questions that you might have. But, I've gotten down to all the topics that I had planned for tonight. Now, back to you, Charlie.
Okay, if these caves are by volcano, and the lava coming out of the volcano, then where did the lava go? You would see it on the land. You'd see it someplace.
You know, you could imagine this lava, you know, coming up from the bottom and then in some cases pushing itself horizontally through the, you know, through the surface, you know, under the ground. But then, you know, what happens is that lava is what's called liquid. You know, it gets to the end of its location, you know, the cave, and then compresses, you know, as the lava cools or stops flowing, it just flattens out, like a tube of toothpaste, you know, if you push it through, and then, but if you let it sit long enough, it will eventually compress, you know, and become, you know, it'll become flat, you know, and now you. You know, it actually creates like a floor of lava. But, you know, what's left behind when that tube compresses, and there's got to be a cave. That's what that's the way I see it anyway. I'm far from a geologist, but that's the idea I always got reading about this stuff.
Okay. Judging from the data, the research estimates that the cave is 150 feet wide and 260 feet long, which is slightly smaller than an American football field with the end zone cut off.
That might be one of the other ones that they think is there, but the one I read about was a little smaller. I think it was only 50 or 60 feet deep, but around 140 feet wide. That's the one that they confirmed. This guy, you know, this group in Italy that studied this stuff. I still haven't figured out how they confirmed it, but, you know, NASA has confirmed it. I wouldn't even bring it up unless NASA confirmed something like that. But, you know, you have different groups around the world doing different studies. And just because one, you know, they have one group that says, oh, look at this, that doesn't mean it's true. So NASA gets all of the facts right. Anyway, back to you, Charlie.
NASA LRO has identified more than 200 of these pits on the moon, suggesting that there could be hundreds of underground caves.
Recently, I wouldn't be surprised if it's the same article. But actually, I read that, you know, 10, 20 years ago, or even more than that. I remember Carl Sagan talking about the possible caves that would be on the moon from lava tubes that could event for small towns. You know, that's the way he spoke. Carl Sagan was one of my favorite authors about all this stuff.
It's a nice cave. I like the way it's constructed. Really. All right, back to you, Paul.
Okay. Very good, Charlie. I don't hear anybody else out there right now, so I'm looking at the clock. I ran out of material anyway, so I'll turn it back to Dr. Roy, and I'll wish you 73, and we'll catch you down the log, or maybe next week, Charlie. But now let me turn it over to Roy. AC2GS, this is WS2N for the SpaceNet report for the TechNet. Back to you, Roy.
Yep, this is AC2GS. Thank you, Paul. Thank you for the SpaceNet report. Thank you for all that you do on the technical net and all that you do for the club. We all appreciate it, and I especially do. And thanks to those valiant few who participated tonight. Hope the rest of the gang comes back next Sunday night when we're trying to do this all over at 8 o'clock. As always, I'd like to remind people that Dick, K2RIW, who did this for many, 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 many years, would often close his net with the advice to be kind to each other. That's always good advice. Always want to remind people of good old Epictetus. It's impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. Try and keep your mind open to new things and try and learn something new every day if you can accomplish it. Everyone have a great week. Stay safe, be well, and hopefully come back next Sunday at 8 when we try and do this all over again. And I will go clear with the final phrase, as per always these days, Slava Ukraine.
Yeah, Roy, 73. By the way, I think it's a good day for America, if you've been following the news.
Well, hopefully they'll be even better in front of us.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's going to work out very good now. A little concerned there for a while. All right, have a good one, Brian.
You too. Speak to you next week, 73.
Okay, very good, 73, Roy, and 73, Charlie, have a good one.
Tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet, tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater. Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.
Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Fly Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. Good morning. The time is 5 o'clock a.m.
Fly Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.
Thank you.
MarkInfoNet, tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
YYZ, this is KE2GSC.
Roger that, on the cross front. KE2DSC, I will let you concentrate on your driving, and give me a text when you reach your QTH.
Bravo Tango Bravo on a frequency.